Know that what really the Sunday school lesson was about, but it fits with what I'm going to be talking about here as far as the church of Smyrna goes from Revelation chapter 2. If you have your Bibles, I'd encourage you to open up there to Revelation chapter 2 just to follow along. These are the rulers, they say, that are found in Smyrna. There in what is today Turkey. But back when these buildings were new, brand new, being occupied, there was a man who was a bishop of a church, in the church in Smyrna. His name was Polycarp. I don't know, Polycarp, what kind of a name that is, but it's one you don't forget once you hear it. Polycarp. Polycarp has a distinct situation in his life because he was a disciple of the Apostle John. So Polycarp had a direct connection to the last living person who knew Jesus face to face, John the Apostle John. Well, this city is contrasted with the church at Smyrna. The city, you can't tell from the picture of the ruins, but the city was known for the lovely architecture of the Roman columns, the temples to the pagan gods, and all of these things. People came to Smyrna and were taken by the richness of the setting there. It was a lovely place indeed to visit. Now this is contrasted with what we're going to find in the letter to the church. This church at Smyrna, located in such a lovely place, didn't have it too easy. Following along in our regular outline, we're going to look at how Jesus is described here in this introduction to the letter to the church at Smyrna, in Revelation chapter 2, beginning in verse 8. Jesus directed John to write this letter to the church of Smyrna, and he said, "Write these things, says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life." Now, there's a lot of things we can say about Jesus as far as being the first person ever born to a virgin mother. That's a first? Sure. There's a lot of things we could say about Jesus was that he was first at. But I want to look at this phrase where he says, "This I am the first and the last." Yeah, we can put a lot of things into that statement, but I want to take that statement and apply it to what's written in this letter so that we can come to some understanding of what Jesus must have meant when he said, "I am the first and the last." Not just some nice thing that we think of that fits. No, we're going to stick to what it might do as far as this letter is concerned. So, the first part, the first that Jesus was part of, I'm going to just say for this morning's discussion, the first order of things. You know, he was just like us. That's the first order of things. When Adam was created, people came into being a particular way, and that happens up until this very day. Now, that's the first order. He said, "I am the last order." He was the first one to be raised to immortality. That's the last order. We've got the first order, what we experience now. There's a last order of things that Jesus is experiencing now. He said, "I am the first and the last." "I was dead," Jesus said. "But I'm alive now." And you know, that is something I don't think any other human being can say. So that was another first for Jesus. The first to be able to say, "Yeah, I was dead, now I'm alive." But see, later on, if Jesus gives us the promise that we'll be able to say that too. We'll be able to say, "Yeah, I was dead, but I'm alive now." That's going to be something I think that we can all look forward to. It's worth looking forward to. So he said, I died as part of that first order. The way things were set up from the beginning, yeah, I was part of it and I died in that. But I'm alive as part of the last order. I know what's going to happen. You know, one of the things about death is, other than Jesus, nobody's told us what it's like. Nobody's there. I know there's guys on television, they're going to tell you they're talking with dead people. Don't believe it. Dead people. As the old detectives used to say, dead men tell no tales. Period. Don't be taken in by people who say, I can get you a conversation with your grandmother. It isn't going to happen. It isn't your grandmother. Believe them. So Jesus said, I am alive as part of the last order. Now here's the thing. Jesus said, I was alive, I died, and I'm alive forevermore. I know what it's like. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be faithful to death, to die. And maybe Jesus died thinking he had been abandoned by his Father. Why have you forsaken me? Remember he cried out? Maybe he died that way. But when he was resurrected, let me tell you, all of those doubts went right away. You have to believe that, don't you? And Jesus said, I was dead, I'm alive now. Listen, I know the way. You listen to me, you follow me. Jesus said, I am the way to this life. Do you want to follow me? You can take your chances out here if you want. He is the door that leads to life. He knows the way. Listen to me. I know the way. Come on, I'll show you. Well, the reason I say all of this is because of what's contained in this short letter to the church at Smyrna. And I think it pertains to this. I'm not trying to lay down the law here. You don't have to agree with me if you don't want to. That's fine. And tomorrow I might not agree with myself either. But right now, this is what I think. Jesus introduced himself this way to this church in this letter because of what Jesus knew. He said there in verse 9, I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but really are of the synagogue of the adversary. They're really the ones, that group of people, that congregation that are against us. They're scattering. They're not for us. They're against us. Your works, Jesus said, I know. I know your works. I know your daily deeds. I know your behavior. I know what you intend to do when you get up, and I know what you do accomplish during the day. I understand these things. I know what's going on. And I know that when you get up out of bed in the morning or you wake up, that there are certain things that you face that are possibilities in your day that we're going to classify this morning as tribulation. He said, I know your tribulation. There's an interesting thing about this tribulation here. Tribulation comes from the Greek word that means pressure. You ever felt pressure? You ever felt pressure in life? The one kind of pressure that I feel most of it is deadline stuff. I gotta be done with this before, and you know, you gotta get it going. And that's no real pressure. None, really. None. But it's the pressure brought on here, I think, especially because of their faithfulness. Have you ever felt pressure in your life because you were faithful to Jesus? Somebody said, if you're going to say that about Jesus, or you're going to act that way because of Jesus, or you're going to follow Jesus, I'm going to do something that you're not going to like. And that pressure is the kind of tribulation Jesus said, I know. I know the tribulation. I know the pressure that's laid upon me by those people who say they are Jews but really aren't. They aren't. If they were real Jews, thinking perhaps that they would be Christians, that they would be followers of him. But they're not. Because they're trying to force, by their pressure, trying to mold people into something other than what God wants. Now, you felt that pressure, I'm sure. There's been some pressure. Maybe nobody else has seen it. You felt this pressure on yourself. You applied it to yourself because you know, I know what God wants out of me as far as obedience is concerned, but I know what my flesh wants as far as pleasure is concerned. And so now, here's this pressure, and who's going to win? You know the old story about the Indian? This chief was telling this young Indian, he said, here's it, you have this war going on inside of you, it's like you have two wolves inside of you. One wolf is good, one wolf is bad, and these two wolves are always fighting for control. So the young boy said to the chief, well, which wolf wins? You know the story, right? The chief said, the wolf that you feed will win. You see. And so we put the pressure on ourselves, but sometimes the pressure relief valve goes the wrong way. And we conform to this world, and we conform to our pleasures, and we don't conform to Jesus Christ. Don't bring it on anybody else. Who do you feed? What do you feed? That's the point. Jesus said, I know your tribulation. Do you think that Jesus felt pressure in his life at all? I think he felt it all the time. All the time. He knew. When he said, I know your tribulation, he wasn't just speaking of what was going on in Smyrna. He knew by experience what that's like. He was tempted in all ways, just like you are, but he didn't sin. That's a wonderful, wonderful thought. He said, I know your poverty. We know what poverty is today, right? We know poverty. Sure we do. We might know it if we see it. But we don't generally know it by experience. You know, these people that Jesus is addressing by this letter, they weren't just poor people. You see, back then, the government, there was no government agencies. There was no social security checks. There was no welfare. There was no general assistance. But if you couldn't make it, you didn't make it. If you didn't have food, you didn't eat. Unless there was somebody who took pity upon you. We're looking at people here that made up a church that were worse than the homeless we have in this country. Or at least this city. They were poor. And these poor people banded together in the name of Jesus Christ and had a congregation. And Jesus said, I know your poverty. I know what you're going through. What does Jesus have in this world? Said, I don't have a place to lay my head. The foxes have holes, the birds have their nests, but I don't have anywhere. I don't have anything. For our sakes, he made himself poor. For our sakes. So that we can have the riches of God through Jesus. Well, that's where the contrast comes up. What's rich and what's poor? I told that story many times about that African chief. Saw him on the TV. He wasn't wearing anything but a little cloth around his waist. Had no teeth. He had a staff in his hand. He squatted down, giving an interview to this journalist, making a documentary. He had eight wives, and each wife had her own little compound that took care of their own goats and their own cows. Anyway, he had a place where he lived by himself until he invited one of the wives to come and stay with him. But these wives and their children took care of his livestock. He didn't have anything to do. He's squatting down there in the dirt, no shoes on. No teeth, holding on to his staff, and he said to this reporter, who is richer than I am? And I thought, you know, what word is that? It's a second, isn't it? Well, I've got to get a TV and figure what's his name's got. You know, it's a matter of focus and perspective, that's for sure. But these poor people that had nothing, that were looked down upon by the people of Smyrna and the other citizens, because Smyrna was a nice place. It looked pretty. And you got these poor people running around. Do something with them. Get them out of sight. You know how that works. It still works that way today. Jesus knew their poverty. But he said, yeah, I know. There's two ways to look at this. There's the world's way, and there's God's way. These two ways. And Jesus said, I know your poverty, but you are rich. Now, you want your riches now, or you want your riches later. You decide. Choose. This whole thing's going to boil down to, well, maybe we don't have now, but what do we got later? Yeah, we don't have it now, but a little later. What's coming up? Looking forward. We're going to choose the treasure in heaven or worldly law. That's where the choice comes from. And then there was the thing that Jesus also knew. He said, I know the blasphemy of those from the synagogue of Satan, from that congregation of the adversary. I know that blasphemy. Jesus heard it himself. He was called a drunkard. He was called a glutton. He was called all kinds of things because he hung around with people who were poor in this world but wanted to be rich toward God. Jesus knew the blasphemy. He knew what it was. And this pressure from, I'm going to tell you, religious people, yeah, I know it says synagogue of Satan. We're not looking at a bunch of occult Satan worshipers here. No, that's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is those who were adversarial to the things of God. That's what he's talking about. Those who said they're Jews and really are not. That's where that pressure was coming from. It was pressure from the religious people. He knew firsthand what the pressure was from the religious crowd. The religious people were the main opponents of Jesus. Not the Romans. No. It was the Jews. He knew firsthand what that pressure was. He knew what that poverty was. And he knew what true riches is as well. And he knew firsthand what blasphemy from scoffers were. And I think especially as he was hanging on the cross, he knew what it was. And he knew firsthand what it is. When we say, I'm going to be obedient to death, Jesus said, I know exactly what that is. And it's easier said than done. Well, we can say it, but we mentioned in Sunday school. We can say, I'll be faithful to death when we think death is a million years away. Oh, yeah. But when it comes down to just a little bit of suffering, I don't want to do that. I will be obedient in suffering, but I will be obedient in death. How does that work? I don't think that's true. They're lying about one of them. They're certainly not telling the truth about both. But Jesus knew firsthand obedience to death. He knew the way, and he wants us to follow. Now, if this is the way for Jesus, is it going to be any different for us? If the way for Jesus was obedience to death, you think you're going to get a different route? I don't think so. I don't think so. From verse 10, here we have the comfort, the counsel that Jesus gave to the people here. He said, don't fear any of those things which are about you are about to suffer. Don't fear any of those things. Now, it's not the saying is, don't be afraid that these things are going to happen. He said, don't fear these things that are going to come upon you. But I think it's like echoing those words that Jesus gave when he said, don't be afraid of men. Don't be afraid of what man can do because he can only kill you. That's the end of his. I'll tell you who to be afraid of. Jesus said, you be afraid of a woman that not only can kill your body but can destroy your soul and health. That's the one you ought to be afraid of.
So here he's saying, don't be afraid of those things that's going to come upon you. Don't do it. Don't care what man can do. It's only temporary. Some of you are going to be thrown in prison for testing. All right? We're going to go to prison, and it's going to be a test of our faith. That's what it's going to be. Just like with Peter, when Jesus was taken and arrested, he told Peter, when Peter said, I'll follow you to death, these other guys will. Jesus said, no, wait a minute, Peter. You don't understand the seriousness of the gravity of this whole situation here. Satan has demanded to have you to shift you like wheat so that he might be able to shake you from your faith. You ever have your faith tested? You ever been real, real sick and then wondered, is the resurrection the thing I should trust in or not? You see, have you ever been in a place where I know I need to be faithful, but is it really going to pay off? Is God real? You see, we come to these points where all sorts of people, activities, thoughts, arguments try to shake our faith from us. And Jesus said, some of you are going to be thrown in prison for that kind of testing. You go into prison, and this wasn't like our modern day prisons are. There were no rights for the prisoners. There was maybe even no food or water for the prisoners. They threw you in there. Maybe they just forgot who you were and where you were. You might end up dead there, catching some kind of deadly disease from the last person that died in that cell. Who knows? It was a miserable place. And you get thrown into this kind of a hole, would you wonder, does God really exist? Why did God let this happen to me? Why? If God, if you're real, get me out of here. You did it for Paul, you did it for Peter, why ain't you doing it for me? Why aren't you doing it for me? You see, when times get tough, it's easier to question God, and that's when this testing comes up. It's like Peter. Peter came through it. 10 days of tribulation. I don't think that's a literal 10 days. I think it's more like a short period. A short period of time, as it says in 1 Corinthians 10:13. But there is no temptation overtaking you, but such as is common to man. And God will, with that temptation, give you a way to stand up under it so it doesn't crush you. God will give you a way to stand up under it that you may be able to escape. God's escape route is to stand up under that pressure. Yeah, it's pressure. There's pressure in life all the time. You know, you couldn't go down the road in your automobile if it wasn't for pressure. In your tires. Pressure is not always bad. Sometimes it's good. 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us the tribulation, difficult as it may be, is not always endless. It will come to an end. And Jesus said to these people, be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. There's the trade-off. You be faithful, I'll give you a crown of life. Is that a good deal? Is that a good deal? Well, you know, I have to admit that sometimes we have other things on our mind. You know? Like there might be the Dodger game on TV today. There might be something else I got planned, and you know, that's what my focus is this, and you're talking about a final life being faithful, but I'm not even thinking about dying. Things are going too good for me. Oh, let's back up a minute. Let's talk about the person who's got bone cancer. The doctor said, we're going to try this, and if it doesn't work, there's nothing else we can do. Now, is he worried about the Dodgers playing baseball, or is he thinking about this? You see, the focus of our lives can change radically, instantly. What are we focused on? You know, if I don't get this promotion, I'm just going to die.
Why are you really?
Really? Jesus said, when you are faithful to death, I will give you a crown of life. And here we are, if our lives are so comfortable and so well ordered and so well maintained that we're not concerned about dying or the crown of life, because this life is pretty good. I kind of enjoy it. Well, God might have to put you in a place where you understand it from His perspective. That's all. Is this a good deal, that crown of life? We might be pressured by the world, and the pressure, the world can pressure us. You watch TV today, you'll see it. Commercialism. Buy this, buy this, buy this. Do this. Buy it. You're going to be fat and ugly if you don't send us your money. You're going to be whatever. You're looked down on. You're not going to be with it. And so we get this pressure from all sides to buy things. We get squeezed to the bursting point. We get ridiculed for our faith. There is the pressure of having our faith tested. And there is the pressure of being faithful unto death. I know nobody wants to die. Now that includes me. Nobody wants that. And especially, you don't want to bring it on prematurely, right? If you just say the word, we'll get you out of this prison, we'll put you back where you were, and things will be better. You don't have to die. If you see things our way, well, Jesus said, be faithful unto death. And that might be an easy thing to do for some people. So we need to look at the promise, that crown of life. That's what Jesus promised. James chapter 1, verse 12, said, blessed is the man. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved. You see that? There's the temptation. And what's the end of that temptation? There's approval after the test. You take a $100 bill, and you know there's some tests you can do with that to make sure it's genuine, authentic. And after that testing, when it's approved as a real thing, it's $100. If it's not approved, it's fake. For when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Look at that. The testing is a good thing because it brings on approval, and the promise, we have the promise of the crown of life, and this crown of life is not handed out automatically. It's a reward for those who earn it. You ever just say that again? And if you don't agree with me, we'll talk about it. But this is a reward for those who earn it. Why do I say that? Well, because we need to hear what the Spirit says to the churches. It is a matter of overcoming. In verse 11, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. That's what Jesus said. It's a matter of overcoming. He who overcomes. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. It's a matter of overcoming. It's a matter of overcoming the pressure of this world to be forced into its image, its mold, its fashion. It's the pressure. It's the matter of overcoming the ridicule because of your faith. It's a matter of overcoming and enduring the testing of your faith. It's a matter of overcoming and being faithful unto death. Awesome. I can imagine it's probably very fearful, horrific. But the promise is the second death ain't going to hurt you. That's the promise. Those who overcome will not be hurt by the second death. Well, I mentioned Polycarp at the beginning. We got time. And I think that Polycarp is a very interesting individual. If you have internet access, Google Polycarp, P-O-L-Y-C-A-R-P. See what kind of those things you find out about this man. He's not one of my heroes, but I admire him greatly. He died in 155 A.D. He died. He was the bishop of the Church of Smyrna. He was killed in Rome, and his death, his murder, and trial is pretty well documented. And you'll find it online if you look. But he was taken to Rome, and they were threatening him with wild beasts. We're going to put you in the one with the wild beasts. And he said, I got nothing to fear from them. Don't do it. Okay, just do it. Well, they decided, well, maybe the wild beasts weren't the real thing, the right thing to do. So they thought, we're going to start a fire around it. That's what we'll do. We'll burn you. Well, anyway, they said that Polycarp, he was an old man. He was a very old man at this time, but they said to him, listen, all you have to do is say that Caesar is Lord. Is that easy enough? Just say that Caesar is a genius, that he is all-knowing. Is that too difficult? You do this, Polycarp, and we don't have to go any further with this. We'll send you back home. Polycarp said to them, 86 years I've served Christ. He never did me any wrong. How can I blaspheme my King who saves me? Polycarp was put on trial and condemned to death because he was a Christian. And he did want to avoid it. Matter of fact, he said in some of his letters, one of his letters, he said, don't try to rescue me. Don't. They found out where he was staying, and they came and arrested him. When they found out he wasn't going to recant, he wasn't going to change his mind, they said, okay, we're going to set this fire, and we're going to let it go. That's all there is to it. And your death is going down your own head. No. You've got it wrong. That fire isn't going to bother me. He said this. Then he said to him again, Polycarp talking to his judge here, I will cause you to be, or the other way around, I will cause you to be consumed by fire unless you repent. But Polycarp said, you threaten me with fire that burns for a little while, a season, and after a little while it's quenched. For you are ignorant of the fire of the future judgment, an eternal punishment which is reserved for the ungodly. But why delay? Come, do what you will. Do whatever you want. Polycarp said, this little time that I have to suffer now isn't anything to be compared with the glory that's going to be revealed when Jesus Christ comes back. Polycarp was alive when this letter showed up. This verse. And I think Polycarp took the heart and counsel that Jesus gave to him. And he said, I want that crown of life. I don't want the second death to hurt me. I'm going to be faithful until I die. That was his thing. Jesus knows your situation too. He knows what you face today. Jesus isn't far from us. He knows what we face each and every day. You know, I mean, what you face, is that more than what Jesus faced when he was walking on the earth? He was tempted just like we are, but he didn't sin. And that crown of life, is going to make it worth the struggle. Jesus can make it worth the struggle. He can make it worth your time to be faithful unto death. He can.